Hey, what's up, guys? This is Jordan Osgilbert of Cloud9, and you're listening to TCR.
Okay, so let's start.
Hello. Hello, and welcome. Welcome back to another edition of The Center Ring, a.k.a. TCR, a.k.a. your favorite esports podcast, episode 150, coming to you live, pre-recorded from an undisclosed location, the date, March 25th, 2019, the time, 8:45 p.m. Central Standard Time. Hello, my name is Tim. I will be one of your captains for this journey into esports. Alongside me, as always, we have Anuj. Hello, Anuj.
Hello. How are you guys doing?
Beautiful. And we have Brett. Hello, Brett.
What's up, guys?
Howdy.
Howdy.
We got Joey in the chat. What's up, Joey? For those who don't know, we are streaming. We stream every episode of The Center Ring. So you can catch that on our Twitter, at The Center Ring. That will always have all the links there. We are on Twitch, The Center Ring on Twitch. And also on Facebook, Twitter, every other platform you can possibly think of through Watch Phantom, which does Dallas sports as well, and just general sports talk. So if that's your thing, go check them out. And have fun with the boys there. If it's not, and maybe you're watching from there and you're like, what the hell are these nerds talking about? We're talking esports. You know, that thing that was on ABC this weekend that everyone loved so much.
Everybody.
Everybody.
Nothing like a good Sunday morning of esports.
Everybody on
national
Twitter
television
just loved esports. You know, I don't know what else they wanted at 2 o'clock on a Saturday or Sunday, but hey, they got Overwatch. This is going to be the best episode ever, though. So if this is your first time listening, you're in luck, because we have meta talk. We teased it last week. Two huge patches coming into our beloved games in Overwatch. Blizzard's mixing it up. Is GOATS dead? We'll discuss that. Also, CSGO had an uncharacteristic big patch, and not just like changing prices here and there. Like, it could actually mix up how you play the game, which is not in character for Valve to do with Counter-Strike. So we'll get into that in a second. Of course, we'll end the show with e-news, and of course, follow us at The Center Ring on Twitter. Let us know how you're doing. Let us know how we're doing, most importantly, because we do love you, the listener. Follow-up from last week, if you haven't gone yet, go and follow Q Up on any podcast outlet. Also, Team Envy's YouTube. Anuj and I were invited onto their weekly podcast last week, so you can still check out that episode. We talked just general esports as a industry. Raving reviews. Raving. So
it was fun, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was a lot of fun. It's also cool to see, like, on YouTube and people's reaction to it. And no one has said anything bad, which is good. One person said that we looked like Guardian and Shazam. I'll take that as a compliment.
That was the best. That was the best.
But it was a lot of fun. And I'll tell you what, nothing makes you more motivated to get in shape than, like, seeing yourself on camera, though.
Okay, seeing yourself on that type of camera.
I've never seen myself in like that much HD.
Yeah, I can see a little bit of Guardian in Anuj. Or was it the other way around?
Bro. Bro, come on now.
I think I'm Shazam.
Yeah, totally.
I mean, it's almost racist, Anuj, that you just assumed that you were Shazam.
I was going with more of an FNS style myself, but.
Whoa.
It was a lot of fun joining their podcast. I can't wait to do it again. Hopefully maybe we can have them on here coming up soon. Kind of share the love. It was great. It was great. I'm day one of my diet, though. I did start a diet based off of seeing me on camera.
What was it like? keto, or what are you doing?
You know, it's just cutting out sugar. I don't really know. I don't know enough about being healthy to pretend like I know what I'm doing. It's just cutting out the obvious. I'm so tired.
Eat less.
Yeah. You know,
portion less, control, blah,
less
blah,
junk
blah, blah.
Food, you know. You know how it goes. We'll see. Yeah. We'll see. Look, all I'm saying is maybe next time we're on there, people are like, damn, looks like Freakazoid's on.
Yeah. Like, damn, Freakazoid boy. And his friend Guardian.
No, it was a good time. So go check that out. Queue up. If you're looking like on iTunes or Spotify, or go to Team Envy on YouTube, and they'll have it there as well. So that's always fun. But let's get into today's episode, because we have a lot to discuss and not a lot of time to do so. Anuj, I want to start with Counter-Strike, and I want you to kind of lead the way. Now, this weekend, we did have the first official tournament with the update. I know WESG kind of stole that thunder as the patch happened in the semifinals, and they couldn't roll back, so they had to finish the tournament with it. But that doesn't really count. We had Blast Pro Series in Sao Paulo this last weekend, and this was the first tournament with the new patch. Astralis ended up beating Liquid 2-1 in the finals. MIBR went 0-6, which is just amazing to do in your home country.
Sorry, 0-5. I wrote that wrong.
0-5.
0-5,
In their own country. That sucks. And FaZe went 1-4.
It's rough. I mean, for MIBR especially, I mean, imagine you're getting a chance to play at home. You're bringing the old lineup back. The hype is, you know, through the roof for, I think, expectations. People want to see them come back, I mean, is what I'm getting from this. As much as they were hated when they were at their peak, people are looking for a comeback story with them. And, you know, it isn't clicking. They looked really bad. I mean, the only thing you could say is, hey, it's at least early with the return of this lineup, because they were playing against... like, this was a stacked lineup here, right? I mean, in terms of who was at this event, from Astralis, Liquid, Ents, who was on fire at the time, you know, FaZe and NiP. And so they just didn't look good. They just, I mean, it was as simple as that. They didn't look in sync. They weren't really close in several of the games. And towards the end, it was really pretty obvious that it was just, you know, it wasn't going to happen, that they didn't have a chance going into the last match to even, you know, have a chance to play in the finals or move on, or just a disappointing performance. And I feel the same about FaZe. I mean, again, another team that we keep thinking is going to turn the corner and rebound, and, you know, eventually things are going to get better, and it's not. And at this point, it's like, I don't know what they turn to, because it's not like they're not beating Astralis. They're not beating anyone right now, right?
Historically, I don't have the numbers in front of me, so this is just kind of throwing this out there off of memory. Historically, though, MIBR, this is talking SK, whatever, you know, Luminosity, however, whatever, this team, I don't think has performed very well in Brazil. I feel like every time they go there, they always kind of have a lackluster performance.
I don't think it's ever been like, so there's a little difference between maybe going out early in a playoff stage or something, right? You're talking about a 0-5 performance, which is a historically bad performance. I mean, when it comes to just tournament play in general, like, you always see an underdog pull off a win on a random map. That's what we all say about BO1s, right? Like, anybody can win those. You know, it's just get hot at the right time. Good chance you can pull off an upset on a BO1. They weren't able to do that at all. I mean, they just showed no fight. And then, again, with them, we're hoping that this is more of an early, like, reunited process that maybe they're going to go through here. That was, you know, more than likely a lot of pressure playing in front of the home crowd, right? Like, you're just going to have an added amount of pressure in that situation. So that doesn't help to go along with that. Maybe that led to somewhat of a poor performance, but they're not going to have a lot of opportunity to turn it around if they keep playing this way, right? Like, you've got to see improvement.
Because, I mean, there's been a lot of changes. I mean, the core is still there, but, you know, they swap out a player here, move Taco. Taco goes to Liquid. Then they bring that didn't really work out when they brought in, you know, Stewie and Tarek. So they bring in Yanko. Yanko didn't really work out, so they bring back Taco. And then early, it looks like that's really not working. Are we still giving them a pass, or is it to the point where it's like, man, is this who they are? just super inconsistent and not really up there with the Liquids and Astralises of the world. Like, there's no chance.
Well, they're definitely not up there. I mean, that's an obvious, right? They're definitely not.
Well, maybe
in
like
talks of top five even at this point, yeah. Right? Okay. But for them, I think this is more. Every time you make a change, it kind of resets the clock a little bit, right? The problem is this is the effect of like an ongoing poor performing team. So it's an extended period of play that we're now seeing. But I do think, you know, when you make changes, it needs to reset that clock in terms of giving this particular lineup a chance and not necessarily comparing it to what the last one did. But yeah, they're definitely running out of chances. And I feel the same way for FaZe. Like, what are you going to do? You're going to keep swapping out the fifth player in hopes that it's going to work. Obviously there's a bigger problem here. Where you look at teams like, you know, like NIP, they're a team that has a reason to struggle right now with Dennis stepping out of the lineup, bringing Draken back, who knew where his mindset was going to be. And it's, you know, it's not like, you know, even they found a way to squeak out a win ultimately, right? Like they won two games there, one of them against FaZe and obviously the other against MIBR. So that's a team that you would think those teams would be able to take advantage of and not necessarily the other way around. So yeah, I mean, it's just disappointing. And I don't know, at this point, it's like, you got to just, hey, give them another couple tournaments. Let's see how this goes. It's going to be a few months for MIBR, at least of wait time to see where this turns out. For FaZe, I do think that clock is running a lot shorter. Like, there's a lot of money that they're paying to these players on both ends. But FaZe has been performing, you know, they were at number two for a long time. And since they've dropped off, they've never came back. So they're just headed in the wrong direction is what it feels like.
You said Ents going 3-1-1. I mean, they kind of kept that major performance going over, which was nice to see. You know, the fact that they were still performing. I mean, this, for all intents and purposes, was a legit stacked tournament, despite everything we just said about MIBR and FaZe. But going into it, it was a stacked tournament, so it was nice to
see
Ents.
Bunch of heavy hitters, for sure.
Yeah, exactly. So it's nice to see Ents kind of keeping into that major form.
With them, it was their only loss came to Astralis on a 16-14 match where they really had an opportunity to win that. And their tie, which is, you know, I think we should talk about this for a second here. This was the most brutal part, is the tie was in the decider match, essentially, versus Liquid. I think, like, the differentiating thing is, like, round differential is what it goes off of at that point instead of an overtime. And so the game ended at 15-15, both Liquid and Ents being at 3-1-1. In that situation, and so they got the pass to essentially move forward into the finals against Astralis. So I thought that was a terrible taste in people's mouth to kind of end it that way and not giving Ents an opportunity to take that into an overtime and actually win that game. I feel like you need to win the game to advance, but with this setup, that would be the most disappointing thing. I think the tournament right. as a whole was incredible, but That situation sucked for Ents.
It sucks when it comes into situations like this, but I don't necessarily hate the no overtime format that Blast Pro does. Mainly because it helps keep everything on schedule. It helps keep the schedule a little bit more honest, which just is impossible to do in esports, but this helps at least keep it a little bit better. But I also think it also adds more drama to the blowouts that happen early on or close games that happen, right? A 16-14, you know, loss, you can still kind of hang your hat on it and saying, okay, like we took rounds, which is the important part, right? It just adds a little bit more storyline, almost like the home and away goal that they do in soccer, right? It's kind of like, look, you could still lose, but you scored four goals while you were away, so it's huge.
It is a valuable storyline because, I mean, we were talking about it last week with the Dallas Fuel missing a playoff spot because of round differential.
Right,
so,
yeah.
I mean,
and imagine if they didn't do that and they went to some overtime whatever, right? They do still play in matches, but it just I don't hate the having round differentials or things like that decide for ties, I guess. But I'm also in the minority where I don't care about ties. Maybe it's just coming from liking soccer, right? But I don't view ties as like a cop out. I just view it as like that's part of it. That's how you create round differentials with other teams and things like that. We did get to see the major final that we never saw with Astralis and Liquid. Ended up about the way everyone thought, though. Liquid ended up taking Dust 2, 16-13. And then from there, Astralis never looked back. Just in dominating fashion.
It was so impressive because that first loss definitely was an eye-opener. They interviewed like Nap and like, you know, before the game, or I think in between the first and second map. And man, they were so pumped up after that Dust 2 win. I think it was a map that they didn't necessarily anticipate winning. It's a tough map for them. It's not like their best choice. And they let Inferno through rather than playing them on Nuke, which was really surprising because obviously Astralis is dominant on both maps. However, Nuke is also a good map for Liquid. So that's generally the route they would have taken. They let Inferno go through and really got stomped early on it. But Overpass was that map that Liquid was really dying. I mean, they were excited to play that map. They were amped up. You could tell in the interviews that they were ready to go. They felt confident going into Overpass. And man, did they get steamrolled. I mean, you just saw the power of Astralis there, and it wasn't even...
16 too.
Yeah, you talk about a lackluster
third
map. I mean, that was really a blowout. It was one-sided.
And I do want to get into this meta talk now then. As far as the patch that came down a couple weeks ago, do you have Spark Notes offhand, Anuj? Tell the listener, just for a little bit of the things that updated in the latest patch for Counter-Strike.
Yeah. So quite, I mean, an interesting change, because when we've seen meta changes in Counter-Strike, it's definitely leaning towards weapon balance.
And then let me tell you, I'm going to cut you off, but because this is why the 16-2 and 16-8 wins for Astralis are so insane to me, because what this patch did, or what it was really to help, was to eliminate eco rounds, right? It was trying to minimize the amount of rounds that a team has to just pretty much take the L, right? Saving up for guns, so you play three or four rounds in a row with pistols and very little utility and stand very little chance of winning. So you see
it eliminates
a lot
like double
closer,
ecos,
right? It's more difficult now in this current meta to have that big of a blowout. So to see a 16-2 is pretty damning.
Yeah, so the way it's always worked in CS essentially is as you lose rounds progressively, so in a row, as you're losing these rounds, your loss bonus increases per round. So for example, you lose one round, you get 1900. You lose two rounds in a row, next round you get 24, then 29 and 34 and so forth. So as you're losing rounds, they stack up. But if you were to win the following round, and then lose again, so you go loss, right, until you finally get that win. If you're to lose the following round, it resets that loss bonus all over again. So you're really starting from scratch, and it allows these massive blowout victories that you can see, because winning a round is a big detriment if you don't back it up with another win. And so that's how it's always worked in CS. I mean, that's been a foundation piece for how money is worked in CS. This is the first time that I can recall that they've changed this. So what they've done is they've essentially made it a point system for losses. So as you lose, you're accumulating points, right? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Each one of them has a value in terms of money that you get for the following round associated with it. So if you lose one round in a row, you get this much in the same type of setup. If you win a round, it subtracts off of the point system. So to use again an example, if you lose four rounds in a row, that's 3,400. You win a round, you go down to the three-round loss bonus rather than resetting at that point.
And then, so
it
if gives you lose, teams, then you get the three-round bonus.
Yeah, if you lose that following round, then you get that three-round bonus.
I'm following you.
It's basically allowing teams to not go bankrupt in those situations. It's more of a T-sided advantage in terms of, which makes it a disadvantage, obviously, for CTs. I get that it's not like a one-sided argument, but it helps the T economy more than it helps the CT economy, thus allowing more exciting games. You don't have those ecos as often. You're still going to have them, or definitely, you know, should not have a double eco. You'll just see teams playing more aggressive, trying to buy more weapons or you know, better weapons, I guess you could say, and eliminating the eco side. Now, it's mixed reviews in terms of how people feel. I personally think it is a good change. That's just a personal preference in this situation, but I think it's better to see teams really, I want to see teams match up with the best of what they can get. I don't want to see a game where every three rounds they're all at a full bye and then it's a constant reset and the team is like saving. Well, I don't like to see like, that.
What I don't like is in Counter-Strike, if you lose the initial round, right? Like, so round one or the first round of the second half, if you lose that, you're pretty much accepting the fact that you're going to have at least three, maybe even four losses, right? It's just very difficult.
Three losses was more the norm. And then they updated it to where you started with a one-round loss bonus. So two rounds became the norm. So they were already eliminating that pistol economy, like, you know, spread that we saw of a guaranteed almost three rounds. But I'm just talking
traditionally in Counter-Strike, that's how it's been, right? If you lose those pistol rounds, you're basically forfeiting a total
three total rounds now to now almost zero.
But again, though, that's per half, right? So you're really looking at like four or five rounds a game, which is huge. I mean, that's huge when you start looking at some of the how some of these matches go. So I think to now have it to where it's almost plays a little bit more like it doesn't, but hear me out. It kind of is going to play a little bit more like how they do overtime now, where you just start with 16,000, right? You're going to have teams being able to just buy more often. So you're not going to see, I mean, think of all the times where it's like you saw a comeback happening, but then a team would get stuck in, you know, eco hell and they just kept screwing their own win or loss bonus going on. And, you know, I can't tell you how many times, like think of all the old matches that you would have seen differ, right? Like all the old times where it's like Liquid, where they had a huge lead, one team would try coming back, so then you're rocking that loss bonus, you win one. It's almost like teams purposely did it to break your economy.
Yeah, I guess the only thing that I'll miss with this change, and I think it is a good change, like Anoush said, is when a team is down like 14-8 or 14-7, right? And you get a win, you break their economy, you get a win, you know, in... I guess it's going to kill a lot of comebacks, right? Like, we're just not going to see it as much.
It's going to be like harder to come back in the sense of if you're down by a lot of rounds and then go on that crazy win streak, you're not necessarily breaking the other team's economy either, right? But what it's trying to do before it gets to that situation is hopefully not have those massive comebacks that's necessarily needed. Again, it's going to be a 50-50 here for a little bit to really see how it plays out. We're not going to learn this from one tournament. I mean, it's going to take a handful of tournaments to really get a good understanding of how this is going to affect the meta long term. I just think I'm personally just happy to see more gun rounds. And that wasn't the only change that they made. You know, I'll go over the other two a little bit quicker because they're not as important. But they did increase the price of the AUG. They're trying to balance that out a little bit. Obviously, they saw...
My career's over.
Well, they saw the advantage that was taking place there. They increased it by a couple $100. We didn't really notice that affect the usage of the AUG. I think people have now understood how viable and valuable of a weapon that is. So we did see that still purchased a heavy amount in Blast Pro. I didn't notice a drastic change there. The other one is a little bit more interesting in my opinion. They did increase the bullets in the M1A4S, the silenced M4, or M4A1S, whatever I said there. They increased it to 25 and increased the magazine size to 25, and then reserve they increased to 75. People ask, oh, it's only five bullets. Why does that make a difference? It's big when you talk about being able, the ability to like spray through smokes, right? When you were using the previous iteration of it, you were hesitant to do that because a little bit of a spray, you're down to 10 bullets. If they push through, you're probably in a lot of trouble at that point, right? You really needed to be more conservative with how you use that weapon. I would personally love to see this weapon come back into play because you really saw some of the most beautiful looking headshots with this gun.
Oh, yeah.
The precision accuracy. I mean, just there's something about using that silenced M4 that holds a special place. So hopefully this is an ongoing tweak to that weapon. I don't think this brings it back into play all of a sudden. But it's a step closer.
I, I love the fact that they're giving some love to the silenced M4, just because, I mean, that back in the day, that's all you would use, like in 1.6 and everything.
Yeah.
But I am still going to die on this hill that I do not understand Valve's logic in not letting you just buy one of the guns. Like, the fact that you have to select what M4 you want to go in with drives me nuts. Like, if you really want to mix up the game, that's what Valve needs to do. Allow the counter-terrorists to buy either one of the M4s. Why do I have to pick if I want, you know, a CZ or a Tech 9? Just let me purchase which one I want. Like, the fact that you got to go in with an inventory, it's not as big a deal with the pro scene because you know what maps you're going to be playing. But, like, from a matchmaking standpoint, you know, or even then, like, mixing up strategies, right? Like, teams could say, like, okay, guys, we're going to go in with this. You know, we're going to go in a little bit more stealthy. We don't want to show up on the radar or whatever. It's just, it would add a lot more, I think, to the meta and additional strategies and options if they would just let you buy everything. But people have been saying that since day one of Go.
A little crazy that that's never happened, because you're right. If you want to make that a viable weapon again, give people the option to buy it whenever they want to buy it, because right now the unsilenced is still a more powerful and common weapon. So you're not going to see it change too much with this, but I do think you'll see people experiment a little bit, and then they'll kind of see what they do with it. The other one was the price reduction in shotguns. Again, I like that they're trying to make these weapons more viable in the game. By reducing the price, people will be more willing to take chances on more half eco rounds and be able to buy that. Also, by adding penetration, allows them to spam it. Again, just trying to make it more viable. So those are some of the minor changes. Really, the main one coming to the economy change. And so far, like I said, I like what I see, but this will just be an ongoing thing to see where it's at.
Maybe the shotgun change is something that'll get MIBR back in the meta, right? Like, I feel like they're really good with shotguns and those kind of like weird buys, right? So maybe that's the change, boys. Maybe they're back.
I always picture people in favelas with shotguns running around in between like narrow corridors. Picturing a little COD right there.
No, I think part of the issue with MIBR is the fact that everyone's caught up. Everyone's caught up to the old MIBR, right? Same thing that happened with Fnatic back in the day. Everyone caught up to Fnatic. Astralis, eventually someone will catch up to Astralis. We see Liquid is almost there, but yet they could still, like, their loss is just so heavy at the same time, right? Like, yeah, you took a round off Astralis in the finals, and yeah, you're consistently making the finals against Astralis minus the major, but yet when you still lose to Astralis the way they did, it's just like, whew.
It's like, how close are they really? I mean, it's really a one and then a huge gap between two.
Yeah.
And then like another pretty big gap to 3, 4, and 5.
I would almost say like Astralis holds 1, 2, and 3, and then Liquid is the fourth best team.
Started there. Well, that's how it is on HLTV.
I mean, Astralis is, they're really good at micromanaging everything in their game, like economy, utility, all that.
Well,
so maybe teams having one less thing to worry about maybe closes that gap a little bit. I don't know.
Well, I'll say one more thing too, and then we could discuss this a little bit if you want and move on to Overwatch. But I did find it funny. I saw on Twitter, I believe it was Freakazoid, tweeted out saying, like, does anyone know if the Astralis boys play FPL? And Dupree tweeted out saying, no, I'm pretty sure I got kicked from FBL because I don't play it. And I think that is so funny how times have changed. Not from not that long ago, I remember, like, that was the standard of how committed you are from being pro is, well, the Europeans are just better because they sit there and grind FPL all day, right? Like, that was one of the things that you would hear people say is like, well, the Americans, they just don't have as talented people in FPL. And yet here's the top team in the world where their players aren't even in it if they wanted to play on the servers.
Yeah, I think the bigger argument was even that these guys, when they played FPL, they actually played the game from a competitive standpoint rather than goofing off. That's kind of been the knock on NA. But yeah, I mean, Device and Zip are really the only ones that play FPL on that roster, just looking at their their hours logged or their time played. The rest of them don't. You're right. I mean, it's like a bunch of off-hour scrimming and
just focusing on tape and going over the little things.
Something funny that CSGO devs tweeted out, and it was somebody had mentioned, like, hey, how do you stop Astralis? And they said, try this. And it was, for any of you that know console codes, essentially they wrote allow_Astralis_utility 0. And so it was kind of just a funny knock on, you know, even they admittedly know how good these guys are, and it's crazy.
It's good stuff, man. Well, I'm pretty excited to see what happens with CSGO in the next coming, who knows how long this current meta will stick, because like we said, it's really out of characteristic for Valve to do a patch like this to really, really like almost kind of look at, wow, people, like, they almost listen to, dare I say, feedback, but this is Valve and they don't listen to feedback. So I don't
know
where
they 17 new weapon cases.
Right. So who knows how long this meta will stick, but I'm kind of excited to see how the pros treat the meta. And speaking of pros treating meta, the stage one for Overwatch League ended up wrapping up over the weekend with Vancouver Titans defeating Shock 4-3 in the stage finals, taking that to game 7. It was very exciting. It was on ABC. Very funny to read some of the tweets. It's what you thought, you know.
Don't watch. Change the damn channel.
It is.
You know how many, like, channels there are? There are literally thousands of channels out there. And it's just...
blows my mind the reaction that people gave it.
Those are the same people that are going on ESPN like chats and just like trolling. Like,
well, I also love,
those are miserable people.
Like, it's like
it's like stupid.
It's like how offended people get over esports still. Like, it's not like they're like, oh, what is this, right? Like, what is this badminton on ABC or whatever? Right? It's like they are almost like acting like it is like some satanic void. I saw one woman tweet out that, I can't believe ABC is showing this filth. I am not allowing my children to watch this so they don't get any ideas.
I'm like, just allowing them to play it.
Yeah, right. Right. I'm going to watch, let them watch Twitch and everything. But this,
they're
seeing it in a professional manner.
Off a building or something? Or...
It's just...
it's so cartoony.
I don't know, man. It just goes to show that when esports breaks into the traditional sporting world, how far we as an industry still have to go, you know? And I want to start using the word industry. I know the hot topic word is always scene, right? Oh, look at the esports scene or whatever. But I truly do feel like at this point in the game, esports is an industry. And it just goes to show how long, like, yeah, for us, it's huge and for us, it's super popular, but you still see it on, and I know it's the majority few, you know, it's that are the most vocal, but it just goes to show that there are still people out there who are just ignorant on it, on the topic.
They're also anti-vaxxers, probably. That's a topic for another episode.
Yeah,
it's like bringing that up, and it's like for those, it's like bringing up an anti-vax commercial on TV. That's the reaction people are having towards esports on TV.
Yeah, it's just I don't know. But typically at the same time, if you go on the feed of someone who was talking, you know, smack about esports on TV and freaking out like it was the end of times, they're typically talking about that about everything. So. I don't know how personal you want to take it. But besides that, it was a good stage one finals, but that's not really what I'm excited about, because Overwatch had its own overhaul of patches coming up in the last week. And the reason Blizzard did it so soon is so they could get the new hero out there in Baptiste and get it ready for stage two, which starts up here in about a week. So we are going to see this patch take effect in the pro scene for stage two. And this is supposedly going to be the death of goats. Even Blizzard or Overwatch tweeted out kind of a tongue in cheek of like, it's finally over. And everyone kind of figured that they were talking about goats. Even like Overwatch is realizing like, yes, this needed to change. So quickly, I just want to go over some of the big patch notes that we get to look forward to and how we think it's going to affect the pro scene. And I'll get why I say pro scene and not comp in a second. So Baptiste is the new hero coming out. I'm not going to fill you in on what he does. You should already know. But if you don't, he is a support. He's a little bit more of a damage-friendly support. Plays very different. Plays a little bit more like a DPS that can also heal. The reason I think this is huge for the pro scene is you have players like Zachary on the Dallas Fuel who are very vocal, and a lot of them are very vocal against Brigetta and how much they despise her. She was kind of the anchor when it came to goats. She ran with the tanks in a goats meta, keeping them alive and basically dominating anything that came in her path if the meta was played correctly. But the issue is it also took away a lot of the skill play, you know, to Anuja's point. I know you always bring up like it's great and all, but people like seeing headshots. Baptiste will be able to get headshots. So I think that will help alter it a little bit.
Do you think it completely changes it, or it's just like going to be more experimental to begin with, but we'll see the goat's meta still stand strong?
Well, I mean, I think it's going to, I think it's definitely going to change. I don't think you're going to see Overwatch at a pro scene being played the same way in stage two that it is in stage one, because, and Tim will go over the changes here in a minute, the more important ones, but I feel like the changes they did make, they didn't really affect Brigetta. They are going to affect Brigetta, but they kind of nerfed her without nerfing her. they buffed certain heroes that are going to maybe not render her useless, but not make her as viable.
Well, and you know, that's one thing that I like that they did. I felt like they really did a good job this time around with a patch. Is I always hate to see when a character gets reworked or nerfed into oblivion for them being too effective. It seems like Blizzard did a really good job of bringing other heroes up to her level, you know? Kind of like to where it's like, look, you can play these other guys and get through, you know, maybe a shield wall here and there. But some of the bigger things that I think is going to affect the GOATS meta rather than just a new support, because ultimately it's like he isn't going to kill any tanks or destroy any shields or anything. It's what he's going to be able to do with like his damage boosting wall and things like that. But one of the bigger things that it's going to change for GOATS is that Blizzard is completely reworking the way armor works. So now beam type damage is now reduced by 20% when hitting armor. So you're looking at like Mei's primary fire, Moira's alternate fire, Symmetra's primary beam. But damage over time effects is no longer mitigated by armor. Like Widow's Poison, Mei's Blizzard, Hanzo's Dragon Strike, all that used to be affected with armor is just going to eat through it now like normal health, which ultimately means you're going to see tanks die faster, right? So I think that right there, when you combined all of that together, is going to make DPSs a little bit more viable, and you're not taking away the purpose of a tank. They didn't lower Reinhardt's shield health or anything like that. They didn't lower his damage, right? They just made it to where his armor was affected a little bit different, but at the same time reduced beam damage to it. So I think it was a very good give and take when it comes to how that's played.
Yeah, I mean, oh, go ahead, Anush.
I was going to say, what specific characters do you see this benefit? I know you mentioned a couple that will be benefited by the damage over time, but who do you think this brings into play that we're not really seeing right now, or is not, you know, really used in an effective way at the moment?
Well, I mean, some of the characters, and Tim can get to this in a minute, were buffed in this patch. A few DPS players, I feel, got a really positive boost there. But, you know, Tim was talking about damage over time effects. Ashe, you know, being, you know, she has her dynamite, but she also can melt you with her, the aiming down sights. I forget what they call it.
Aiming down sights is fine.
There we go. Whatever. But there's a buff there, but also means. Yeah, but they also increase damage on soldier. I saw one Overwatch player, I forget who it was. I think it was Sinatra. He was saying 76 back question mark. Mm-hmm. Like,
well, maybe? They also increase soldier's damage. They increase his damage from 19 to 20, which doesn't seem like much, but when you think of how many bullets are in the clip, it does. It adds up. You have Pharah's explosive damage, so her splash damage increased, which is going to help that. That's what I think is you're going to see all these little heroes. McCree's Fan the Hammer was nerfed, yet his Deadeye was buffed, which is going to be huge for McCree because since day one, his ulti was only good for zoning players out of areas. Mm-hmm. It was never really used as a primary source to kill people. Like, let's be real. Yeah. That thing took... If you died from McCree's ulti... Like, that is your own damn fault, because you had about 30 seconds to get out of the way.
It needed a change, and especially in today's Overwatch, where I feel like a lot of team fights are kind of won by ultimates, he could be useful. Mm-hmm. In the current state of Overwatch. I mean, but his Fan the Hammer needed it. It was comical. You could watch Taimu use it. And all he did was Fan the Hammer in matches, and it's just like, oh my god, this is not what you want your hit scan character to be.
Junkrat, but his impact damage increased from 40 to 50. Again, doesn't seem like a lot, but when you think of him just raining down his grenades on, you know, a shield, like that's going to melt. He was already a go-to shield melter who's been kind of out of the pro meta for all of stage one. So he hasn't really been there since stage two of last season. So you're going to see him picked up a little bit. Doomfist, his cooldowns were reduced for both Seismic Slam and Rising Uppercut, which is huge for him because he gains armor based off the damage he does on his special abilities.
And if you think about it, I mean, that's nearly a 20% decrease in the time it takes for that ability to come back, which is huge because, I mean, Overwatch is a fast-paced game. There are a lot of scenarios where I was like, you know, 1 second away from a Lucio E to heal up my team, and that fight could have lasted longer. So to reduce it that much is huge.
Yep.
So yeah, I mean, I feel like there's a theme, like, they want more, and the players, fans, you know, watchers like Anuj, they want to see DPS players. And I feel like that's what they're trying to do with this patch.
Zenyatta orbs have increased damage. They increased his direct damage. They've minimized the splash damage for Zarya's right click, her orbs that she fires. So that's nerfing a tank a little bit. Mm-hmm.
I hope to see Moira more in play with her increased healing. Like, I mean, I don't know if that sure seems like they increased it quite a bit. I mean, it was almost a 25% increase from where she was at. And so it's a character I enjoy playing personally. So I kind of hope to see her a little bit more active.
Her ulti got a little bit of a nerf because technically that's beam damage. But yeah, you know, you're probably maybe even going to see her as a pick over. They keep doing this to my boy. He's part of the meta. He's not part of the meta. Now he's like picked all the time in Lucio. Like, maybe she's going to be a pick over him now that he's nerfed.
I will correct you on one thing though. So her biotic orb though is damage over time.
Yeah, but her coalescence and her left click.
Right. Yeah. All I'm saying, I don't really know what dictates damage over time and beam weapons in Blizzard's eyes. I'm going off of what the patch notes are saying. I'm not going to argue like why. I mean, I agree with you. It all seems like damage over time to me, but whatever. That's what Blizzard tells me. So that's what I think, Anuj. I don't think it is one. Like I said, like there wasn't like in this patch, there wasn't one thing that you were like, whoa, no way, this character is going to be so overpowered. It's in this situation, this character is going to be more useful. You know, I would still like to see updates to Reaper. All they did was reduce the damage or the healing received from damage. I hear that they're going to patch it to where he's also invulnerable while teleporting, because that's the most useless ability in the game, because all it does is set up a clean headshot for anyone who sees you. My opinion, they need to do it where you can teleport while moving. That needs to happen because by the time I even teleport somewhere, someone can run up and get to where I'm at anyways. It doesn't really help anything. Sombra's cooldown was reduced while hacking a health pack. I think that will be helpful for her. So like I said, it's not like one thing that is just going to kill goats. I think you're still going to see goats used on certain maps. You know, I don't think that they're going to completely get away from it because they've just learned that, you know, hey, this character is a lot more useful when a pro widow can't one-shot me all the time.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
It's definitely, like, more to your point, Tim, it's not going to kill goats because there's going to be maps like Rialto that are still going to be viable for goats. You know, close choke point maps like King's Row is another one that's probably going to be very goats heavy. Mm-hmm. But it's going to be nice. I mean, I'm already noticing that we're, even with all the bitching, right? Like, Overwatch in Season 2, there's been a lot of variety, more so than there was in Stage 3 and 4 of last year. But yeah, this is just going to add another wrinkle and some more variety, which is always welcoming.
Yeah. Now, the one concern I have is the fact that this is really given only 2 weeks for pros to practice on. And pros just have the biggest habit of not doing something they're not comfortable with. So I don't know how, like, right away will you see meta change? I don't know, right? The optimistic in me says, yes, you're going to see meta change in the pro scene, and it's going to be right out the gate. The pessimistic in me says the pros are still going to run goats because it's what they've been practicing for the last, you know, 6 months.
I think there are Brigetta players out there just, like, you know, whispering in their coach's ear, like, hey, you know, let's get on top of this, like, meta change.
Do not put me
on this. I think we should really consider, you know, not using her, you know.
Also, you know, if there's one group of people that can just dedicate their time to learning a new meta in 2 weeks, it's professionals. So
yeah,
that's kind of their job, is to figure out metas.
They're playing Overwatch like 14 hours a day.
Will be cool, though, to see what teams pick up what. Right, like you have Jake on Houston, who loved Junkrat in Season 1, right? That was kind of his thing. He was the Junkrat of Overwatch League. So will you see Houston using Junkrat more than other teams because their specialty is that, right? Which is something I always hoped for in Overwatch League. I don't like the cookie-cutter metas, right? You have all these different heroes that can play to all certain play styles. It always annoys me that teams just gravitate to the cookie-cutter meta. I wish teams would get a little bit more out of the comfort zone and figure out their own.
It would really be the first time since Overwatch was just all you could really play. It would be the first time that would happen since Overwatch went to the one hero per, you know, team. You could select one hero per team. You know, we haven't really seen that since Overwatch League. It's always been a cookie cutter. You know, you run dive, I'm going to run dive. You run goats, I'm going to run goats. It's always been like that, but that would be great if, like in other sports, you're playing to your strengths, the other team's playing to their strengths.
You have a run game, they have a passing game, and we'll see who wins who. So we'll see. So that's all very exciting for the pro scene. For us simpletons playing pickups, still don't see a queue. Still don't see any type of queuing for comp or anything. It's still pretty, like, all these changes are great, and it's cool to have a new support, but if four of my teammates all pick DPS, it doesn't really matter. So I still think for the layman's in Overwatch, Blizzard still has to look at that.
Yeah, I did get yelled at for picking Brigetta the other day. I thought that was kind of odd. It's like a unicorn, right?
Yeah.
It's like,
normally that was like, okay.
Oh, I mean, sure. Okay.
So I don't know. That's my take on it, but I'm not here to talk about pugs and Overwatch because that's just beating a dead horse. So either way, Stage 2, I think, starts up next week. Let me look at a calendar. No, in 2 weeks. Well, I guess next week. Whatever. Look it up. In 2 weekends it starts. So that'll be interesting to see, to say the least. Putting in my headphones here. Give me one moment, please. All right. I can't hear the E! News bad if I do it. Let's get some E! News, shall we? What's going on here? With CSGO, nothing parts ways with Complexity. This was a move that we all knew was going to eventually happen. He was on loan with them, just kind of doing the one more victory lap around the CSGO scene. I don't know if we will ever see him again as far as a permanent roster. I think he'll maybe always just play this fill-in role, but maybe this gave him the itch. I don't know.
Maybe he just wants to go the way of Shroud, right? And just, all right, it's time to start thinking about the next stage of my life, building a community and just get it rain.
Well, and they also picked up Sick, who has been a great young player. Like, he was really good on TSM. He's had, I believe he was on Rogue before that as well. But, he's a player that I think deserves a chance on a team of this caliber, and it's going to be exciting to see him in there.
Big moves here for our local Envy team. Well, Complexity is local too. A lot of local moves. Just realized that. Envy ended up adding Fugly, Android, and is it Som? How do you say his name?
Som.
Som, right? Okay. So they ended up adding them, Drone and Cutler are no longer on the team. Very interesting. Now it kind of sucks. They ended up failing qualifying for DreamHack Dallas, which them and Complexity ended up failing qualifying, and I think that's officially out. Now it does suck because they both ended up playing each other in the losers bracket. So it's like, well, damn, one of these is going to go. But again, they had zero practice going in. I do think this is a better roster than what they had. It's nice to see them making moves with what is available in the NA scene. So we'll see what happens with Envy as they're in their next tournament. I don't know. That might be some pro league coming up. I have no idea.
Yeah.
And Vice is on trial with Cloud9 to replace Flusha. Meh.
Yeah. Like, okay, so he's hopefully a big upgrade from Zealous then, and I don't know if that's really like going to be the case here. It's coming from Rogue. He's played really well, so I mean, I guess it's going to be exciting. I think the main focus here that people should take away is they really needed the Asian persuasion. They missed that combo of Stewie and Automatic, and this is the fix.
This is replacing
it. You can't get
it.
Stewie. This is the next best thing.
You'll get the next best Asian guy.
Wow. Tim was at his peak then, so they're bringing in the big guns right now.
Wow!
In Overwatch, we talked about last week how they announced that every team by 2020 or in 2020 will be playing home games, and so Fusion was the first team to break the ice as the Philadelphia Fusion announced their stadium plans to be a $50 million stadium in the sports district of Philadelphia, right near where all the other sports teams play. So right there, I don't know if it's in the heart of downtown, but it's, not like off in the boonies. They put it in a meaningful spot.
Yeah, right next to the Rocky statue.
Yeah, and this is legit. Like, you go see the plans, it's going to be their HQ. It can seat up to 3,500. It's kind of like a concert hall, though, right? It's not. I would love to have seen the circle where the players play in the middle and people surround them. But it's not. It's whatever. It's still a super nice stadium. I'd love to see what other teams are planning.
And it's kind of the perfect size because the worst that you could do is be overzealous, right? And just like put in a 10 or 15,000 seat stadium and then it doesn't fill and then it just looks bad. I feel like 3,500 people it's cozy, but it's big enough to be like, man, okay.
So
this is pretty legit.
I have opinion on that.
Okay.
I also don't think it's not ambitious enough for me. I want to see a little bit more than 3,500. I want to see a little, because you're putting 50 million. Okay, so you're putting 50 million into a stadium for a team you already spent 20 million on just to get in the league, right? I would like to see a little bit more future-proofing going into these stadiums than 3,500.
It looks like 20 million of that went in the LEDs for the stadium.
I know, right? Like, very bright stadium. You see the concept, and you're like, damn, okay.
I mean, 3,500 would still be a pretty damn good crowd to fill up on a week-to-week basis, though, for...
Yeah.
I mean, if you're thinking long-term, like, I don't think with these types of just games in general, forget Overwatch or anything, that you started to think, okay, is this like a 10-year game? Like, is that how we're going to look at this? Or, I mean, they have to be a little cautious in that sense because you generally don't see that kind of longevity. It's just so rare.
Yeah.
So maybe there is a little bit of hesitation to be like, okay, let's go 10,000 deep. Well, 2 years from now, if the game is dying, it's going to look real bad. You know, at least 3,500 seems like a manageable number. Still going to look good in terms of
crowd noise.
So
you could still hold high school graduations there.
At the end of the day, that's what we need more of.
more spots for high school.
I guess that's the other thing, too, is like, okay, are they planning on doing this multi-purpose? It's like, how many seat at the Verizon Center here in Grand Prairie? Like for the ESL finals, how many people do you think are there?
I think it was like 5,000.
5,000?
Yeah.
So I don't know.
But we'll got to think they use that year round. That gets used every single weekend.
And that's, I guess that's the other thing too, is like, are these, when you're seeing like Envy, right? We've talked to Envy a lot and they haven't given too many details, but I think all signs point to that they are going to do their own arena eventually, whether it be next year or not, I don't know. But they do want to do their own arena. It's like, are we looking at making this a multi-purpose arena? Are you looking at hosting esports major tournaments, not necessarily Counter-Strike majors? You know, or are we as a org kind of bowing out saying, no, no, this is for our Overwatch League team and maybe some other things for us. We're going to leave Cowboy Stadium for the majors. Like, we're never going to compete taking the big events. We're going to leave that to the established arenas of 30,000. So it's been working so far. So why try to build an esports stadium with 30,000 to maybe possibly win one Counter-Strike major or whatever, right? So I don't know. It'll be kind of interesting to see how all the other teams take it. Also, like teams like with Seoul Dynasty in Korea, where esports has been widely accepted, it'll be kind of cool. In other news, you have Smash Melee. Zane ended up defeating SFAT in full bloom for Melee. And still do not know when Halo is going to be released. 343 and Microsoft are keeping it very close to the belt. They have not made any type of hints that it's going to be released anytime soon.
And if you're looking for our thoughts on that, we did post a video on our YouTube that dove into that. Think about Halo and just kind of going into some of the, you know, our thoughts and theories behind it. You can go check that out on our YouTube page.
Yeah, so definitely check out on our YouTube. You can find that link somewhere on our Twitter, also through our website. TCR.gg has a link to YouTube. Where we're adding a little bit more videos here and there for things we just don't have time to get to on our full podcast. So good times will be had by all. Just like this was a good time. Hopefully had by all. It was a good time for me. That's for sure. Episode 150.
49.
50.
I changed it earlier and then it got changed again. So somebody bumped it up.
Episode's a lie. Oh my god.
Yeah, it's episode 149.
According to the official podcast feed on Audio Stack, which is our hosting company, it's 150.
They don't know anything. What do they know? But I haven't talked to them since we signed up.
So, it's episode something. It's either 149 or 150, and we'll only settle this after we record so we can go look at it. But if you, a listener, really want to prove, just go through our feed and count one by one. And let us know what you get to.
Hit play on all of them while you're going by them.
What if I accidentally miscounted like way back at like episode 23? Just always like an episode behind. That'd be great.
Fake milestones.
Oh, boy. But I do love you, the listener. Go ahead and follow us on Twitter at The Center Ring. We will be back next week talking some more esports stuff. What are we talking about? I don't know. We'll figure that out. But it's going to be good. For Anuj, for Britt, I'm Tim. We'll see ya.